I have Diane Post here from Arizona. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Well, welcome to KOWS here in Sonoma County.
Thank you very much.
It's you're doing something very interesting. The ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, has been, I mean, most people thought it was dead as a doornail, but it's been resurrected. What happened in Arizona?
Actually, what's surprising is that 80% of the people in the United States thought it had passed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's amazing. They thought it had passed.
Oh,
so it was dead because nobody was talking about it because they thought it had been done.
Right.
So the young generation doesn't know anything about it because, well, that was all over with back in the women's movement in the 70s and 80s, right? Wrong.
Interesting.
So thank God Nevada brought it back to life in 2017 by passing it in Nevada. And one simple thing happened. Nevada went from red to blue.
Right.
And when it went from red to blue, they passed it on what day?
International Women's Day?
International Women's Day. Yeah, today, exactly.
Exactly. And they've got an all-female majority in their state houses now, I believe.
Exactly. And Arizona has held that honor for many years, that we had the highest percentage. We never had a majority, but that we had the highest percentage of women. And so you wonder, why aren't we further ahead in the women's rights category? It was because they were Republican women, not Democratic women. So finally, Nevada has overtaken us and has more than 50%. So that's fabulous. We are happy to lose our position.
But that's it. And now you can. Now you're moving on the ERA. Was there a group moving in Arizona all this time, or has it just really reached its time now?
I was involved, actually. I moved here in 1980, and I became involved right after I moved here. I volunteered for the existing ERA coalition and worked for them for a couple of years and became the chairperson, etc. Well, then in 82, when the deadline expired, everybody was extremely depressed and sort of went into a funk and began moving, working on other things since 1980. And we started, during those years, I did, over the years, have our senators and representatives introduce it into the Arizona legislature. Starting in the 90s. We lost all of the 80s, but we did introduce it starting in the 90s. It was never assigned to committee. It was never heard. It was never expected that it was ever going to go anywhere. But we wanted to make the point that we're not gone, we're still going to do this one day. So this just went on during the 90s, and then finally in 2015, it was actually assigned to a committee. It never was heard in that committee, but it was assigned. And in 2017, then, the ERA coalition, we'd been working, a small group of us had been working on it. And in 2017, we were in the House and the Senate on the day when they made procedural motions to hear it on the floor, even though it had never been in a committee. There were other women there with us who were wearing ERA shirts, and we didn't know who they were, but we quickly introduced ourselves. And they were the Mormons for the ERA.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. We joined together, us and the Mormons for the ERA, and we've been together ever since.
Wow, you know, sometimes get unlikely allies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there were Mormons for the ERA back in the 80s as well. And if you remember Sonia Johnson?
Oh, yes, yes, of
course.
Yeah,
and she ran for president. She was excommunicated.
Right.
She eventually ran for president, blah, blah. She was in charge of the Mormons for the ERA back then. So again, they never died. They sort of just went into hibernation like the rest of us on this issue.
Well, you do get jaded as an activist if things don't go well after so many years.
Well, and
obviously,
when you fight like a dog for year after year after year after year, yes, you do get jaded.
Exactly.
So these Mormons for the ERA people were very young. We, from the coalition, we were much older. I would say we were, our youngest person probably was 50. But for them, their oldest person was probably 35. So we were thrilled. And we had no problem joining together, and we've been working together ever since.
Do the Mormon millennials have a different take on their religion?
Well, you know, yes. But also, the Mormon Church has changed its position. In the past, they were actively hostile. Today, they're neutral. So that makes a huge difference in what they can push, what they can say, what they can try to do in their own communities. And Arizona has an outsized Mormon influence for the small number of Mormons that actually live here. But they control a lot of the key districts and a lot of the key committees. So it is very important for us that we have them with us.
Right. How did it in 2015? Who put it forward? Who was the
I think it was
person?
Martin Quesada. But it never was heard.
Oh, okay.
But I think it was Martin Quesada.
Oh, okay.
One of our Hispanic representatives in the Northwest Valley.
Yeah, it's a torturous time from, and when is it? 98 years, I'm reading, since the Equal Rights Amendment was first introduced in Congress. That is a long grind, isn't it?
I was not alive that whole time. But yes, that is a very long time. However, women have been fighting for equal rights since the beginning of time. I mean, seriously. Since the patriarchy overthrew egalitarianism, women have been fighting for their equal rights. And, you know, the I think it was called The City of Angels was written in the 1500s about the inequality of women. And then in the 1792, Mary Wollstonecraft wrote The Vindication of the Rights of Women, 1792. And then Abigail Adams, whose husband John Adams was one of the writers of our Constitution in 1776, when he went off to write the Constitution, she said to him, do not forget the ladies. Because if you put all the power in the hands of the women, of the men, they will become tyrants. That was in 1776. And that's, of course, exactly what they did. And that's, of course, exactly what happened.
Yeah.
But she said, Abigail Adams, back in 1776, that if you forget the ladies, we will foment a revolution. And it will not stop until we get equal rights. And here we are today. 2019, and we are saying today, Abigail Adams did not speak in vain. We will foment a revolution that will not end until equality reigns.
Well, as we've seen in the past, being polite doesn't always work.
Oh, hell no. I've never believed in that. What do they say? Polite women or nice women or whatever, don't make history.
Now, when you speak to, say, in Arizona, the male legislators, what do they say?
Well, male versus Republicans, because every Democratic person in Arizona, every Democratic legislator is on the bill.
Okay.
Male and female, they're all on it.
Great.
So we don't argue with them.
Okay.
We only have to argue with the Republicans, both male and female. And they say four things, all of which are BS. The first thing they say is abortion, 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 abortion. And we say abortion is already a constitutional right. It's already a constitutional right.
Right.
I don't need the ERA to have an abortion. You have been fighting against abortion for 40 years. I have been fighting for abortion for 40 years, and we will continue that fight. The ERA will not change anything because abortion was decided on what ground? Privacy, not equal protection.
Interesting. Yeah.
Their second argument that they say is military. Women might have to serve in the draft. Well, number one, do we have a draft? No, we don't. Number two, will we ever have a draft? Perhaps. One never knows. Number three, will women be drafted? Absolutely they will be.
Right.
Today, women can serve, if they qualify, in every single combat position in every single branch of the military. The Pentagon has already made it clear that if we have another draft, women will be drafted. We already know that. And recently there was a Supreme Court case. No, sorry, not a Supreme Court case. There was a case in Texas in which they said it's unconstitutional to have selective service for men and not women. And that's going to be the finding. We're quite sure of that. But here's what the truth is. If you really look at the facts of history, women were drafted in World War I. They were telephone operators, switchboard operators on the battlefields in France. Because switchboards were new technology, and the men could not do it. They drafted switchboard operators from New York, and they brought them to France, and they worked on the battlefield.
Wow.
But when the war was over, none of those women received military benefits because they weren't, quote, in the military, unquote. So they wore military uniforms, lived in military barracks, answered to military orders.
And could have been blown up at any time, like anybody else.
At any time, right. They fought for 60 years to get recognition of their military service. And finally, Congress did it when one of them was still alive. Mm. All the rest of them had already died.
One. Oh, my goodness.
In World War II, women were drafted to be nurses. And in Vietnam, women were drafted to be nurses.
Right.
These women served on ships. They served in hospitals. They served in battlefields. But after the war, did they get military recognition so they could get pensions and services? No, of course not.
Mm.
They did not. So women has been drafted and will be drafted. The problem is, by not recognizing this, women are screwed out of their benefit. And this is the problem. We have all of the responsibilities of citizenship. We don't have the rights.
Exactly, and it's almost a need of a reparations bill, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the ERA would give us the rights. So that's their second argument, is the military.
Hmm.
And their third argument is so funny, you almost have to laugh. It used to be same-sex marriage, but, you know, they lost that one. That's over with.
Right.
It's still bathrooms.
Oh, no. Oh,
yeah, exactly. Dear. It's absolutely laughable. I might, back in the 80s, the argument was, I might have to go to the to a bathroom where a man was that I don't know, you know, a man I don't know had been in before me. And I say, have you ever been on an airplane? Because in an airplane, there's a man goes into the bathroom that you don't know, and then you go into the bathroom after him, right?
Right.
So this is BS.
Right.
Of course, now they've changed their tactic. Now it's, oh, my God, a trans person might come into the bathroom when I'm in there. Well, I hate to tell you this, but it's probably already happened, and you never even noticed.
Exactly.
And if you are so terrified that a trans person is going to come into the bathroom when you're in there, go into that family bathroom and lock the door behind yourself. Because almost every public facility, every department store, everything now has three bathrooms. A man, a woman, and a family one or whatever.
Right, the UG is,
so
yeah.
Go into that one and lock the door if you're so scared. It's absolutely ludicrous.
It is, if that's all they're clinging to.
But their biggest argument, and this is the real reason, it'll destroy the family. Did you know that?
Wow, I didn't realize it was teetering.
Exactly. Equal rights for women will destroy the family.
Oh, my goodness.
Just like same-sex marriage was going to destroy the family. And when they were talking about that, I said, what, are you afraid that your husband is going to run off with the man the minute he can legally marry him?
Right.
Or are you going to run off with the woman when you can legally marry her, which is far more likely? What exactly impact do you think this is going to have on your family? You know it's all BS.
Right.
It's complete BS.
Right.
And the family that they want to preserve is a family that never existed.
Exactly, that golden age family, yeah.
The 1950s, Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best, Donna Reed show. Such a thing never existed, but this is what they've got in their mind as the ideal family, and by golly, equality for women would destroy this.
Right.
These are their arguments.
Yeah.
There is nothing to any of them.
Pretty flimsy, yeah. But that's it. If I mean, over the years, what was the argument over the years that women couldn't get that? Did they point to a specific thing in the Constitution, or just because it was women, or was that it?
Couldn't get what?
Any rights, equal rights through the years. What was, you know, when it went moved through, you know, even 100 years ago, what was the reasoning they didn't allow it to happen? You know, the male patriarchy, basically.
Well, these reasons.
Apart from, even back then, yeah.
Yeah, back then, but because the reason we have to have it is because of constitutional recognition.
Right.
There was a case of, I can't remember it was in 2000. It was Chrissy Morrison, but that's not the name of the case. But anyway, she had brought a case in, I think it was Virginia, because she was raped on campus, and the campus authorities would do nothing for her.
Hmm.
So we had put into the Domestic Violence Act a provision that allowed women to sue in the federal courts under the 14th Amendment the same way the blacks can sue. For example, there's all these shootings of blacks in cities and towns.
Right.
They do nothing. They won't bring criminal charges. So blacks have to then go to federal court and file a federal rights lawsuit that their rights have been violated under the 14th Amendment. So we put this provision into the Violence Against Women Act because also women who are raped, women who are beaten, the state authorities, the city authorities won't do anything. So how do you make them? You bring a civil rights action in the federal court. So that's what happened in 2000. I think it was 2000. The court ruled against it, and they said there is no constitutional basis for you to protect women.
Hmm.
And that's correct. There isn't.
Yep. No actual
words.
Because
women are not in the Constitution.
Wow.
And there is the crux of the dilemma.
Yeah. So it's semantics, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Of course, with all this background on you, you were talking about another case. Of course, was it yesterday, your senator, Senator McSally?
Yes.
She gave her own accounting of a rape she had when she was in the military.
Yes. And we know that happens quite frequently.
Yeah.
And I believe her, but what I find astounding is that she didn't believe Christine Blasey. And she voted for Kavanaugh.
Right.
She must have known. She must have known that Blasey was telling the truth and that Kavanaugh did what she said he did. And yet, in her position, she voted against the woman who had the exact same experience she did. And now, months later, she's come out.
Exactly.
I believe her. I believe it happened. It happens all the time. I have to say that if I was in the military, I'd had a weapon, somebody would be dead. But this is why I'm not in the military. This is why.
Goodness.
But it's just unbelievable to me why she would not believe Blasey and vote for Kavanaugh when she knew that this went on all the time.
Well, when, you know, one's political philosophy overrules all common sense, you know, something's wrong.
Well, and I don't know that it's political philosophy as opposed to political
expediency.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there any other states working on it at the same time? Is there a race?
Yes, there is a race.
Okay.
You know that Virginia just lost a couple of weeks ago by one vote, right?
Oh, yeah.
One vote.
Wow.
So I was on a national phone call today where we bring all of the states that are working on it. North Carolina's up next. I mean, Arizona's in the midst of it.
Mm.
And North Carolina's up next. Their session started on March 5th. They had a big event on March 5th. They had 200 women at the state house, et cetera, et cetera. So they're going in North Carolina, and they're very hopeful that they can pass it in North Carolina. So they're up next. South Carolina's got it going Florida and Georgia have got it going. Mm. We were hoping, of course, if Stacey Abrams and Andrew Gillum won in Florida and Georgia and Florida, respectively, that we'd have a better chance. But, of course, neither one of them did. Or maybe they did, but they didn't get the seat. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So at any rate, there are groups in both Georgia and Florida working on it. South Carolina. There's a group in Missouri working on it. They just introduced it in Arkansas.
Hmm.
There is a group in Utah, but they won't be. It's too late to introduce it now. Once that Mormon Church change came out, that they were neutral on it, the Utah Mormon group felt like they could start again, but it was too late to introduce it this year.
Oh, okay.
So they'll be introducing it again in 2020. I think that's what's going. We've got a few still. We got to get up and going.
Yeah, exactly. You can't just wait for one to do it. It's got to be.
Oh, no. We're trying to get them all up and going.
Yeah.
Everyone. One of us will get it.
Well,
one of us will get it. Don't go to bed thinking that this is over, because one of us will get it.
That'll be some party.
That will be some party. Yes, it will.
Well, now, Diane, tell us about your life. It looks like you've had an amazing career all around the world in the work you've done as an attorney. Tell us about your background, where you came from, and what inspired you to move into that field.
Well, I became an attorney in 1980, and I moved here in 1980, here in Arizona, from Wisconsin. And I represented battered women and molested children for 18 years.
Mm.
That is a tough job.
True.
That is a very tough job. And the trauma that you hear about over and over, day in and day out, really has an impact on you.
Mm.
And after 18 years, I said, oh, my God, I've got to take a break, you know?
Yeah.
But, of course, I wasn't old enough to retire or ready to retire. So I began doing international human rights work, primarily in gender-based violence. So that's when I began working around the world. I was in Russia and Cambodia and Kenya and Hungary and Mongolia and Algeria and, oh my God, 14 different countries, working on issues of violence against women over the next 15 years. And some of those changes, funny, I just heard today from one of my attorney friends in Albania where I worked. And she's still working for UNICEF over there and doing women's rights work, and it was just fabulous to hear from her. I am still friends with many, many of the attorneys that I worked with in all of these countries.
Mm.
They come here to visit me. I go there to visit them. It's just been a wonderful situation. We've lost ground in Russia. We've lost ground in the United States.
Good point.
But in many of the countries, we still are moving forward.
It must be very difficult when you go to these countries, obviously, because the cultures are very different, how you actually move programs forward. It must be quite difficult.
Well, it was difficult in a couple of different ways. There's the British tradition is you're British and you know, right?
Right.
The British tradition and common law and how that all works in the law. And, of course, America is common law as well.
Right.
And the former British colonies are all common law, like Kenya is a common law country.
Right.
But the European countries are not common law. They're code countries.
Mm.
And it's an entirely different legal system. We're accusatorial as opposed to inquisitorial, etc. It's an entirely different system based on the French system. So Cambodia, of course, is based on the French system.
Mm.
Hungary was just a mess. But at any rate... They're different kinds of systems. So the first place I went was Russia, and I had to learn the entire different system of law.
Wow. Huh.
Because I didn't know anything about that system. I didn't learn anything about it in law school. And the first time I went to do a training, I just assumed they were going to be lawyers like me. Right?
Yeah.
So I go into this training, and I have a bunch of lawyers, and I just started asking questions, and they just looked at me like I was nuts. And, of course, I couldn't speak Russian yet. I did eventually become quite adept at my Russian language, and I didn't even need a translator. But at that point, I couldn't speak Russian, and I turned to my translator, and I said, why are they all looking at me so funny? And she said, because what they said was, you don't ask us questions. You tell us what you want us to know. We write it down, and that's the end of it. And I went, uh-oh. This is not the way we do things.
Yeah, the
It's a completely different learning system.
Yeah, just the old rote system, it sounds like.
Exactly. It's the old rote system, and they were not prepared to answer questions from... I mean, I wasn't that young. I was, I don't know, 52 or something, but from an American attorney, they're going to answer a bunch of questions? Not. So I quickly had to adjust my strategies, but eventually I did get back around to where I was doing what I intended to do, which is ask them questions. And it was so funny because after a while, they said to me, Diane, how is it that you know our law better than we do? And I said, because I studied it. I read it and read it and read it and read it and read it.
Oh, beautiful.
And they said, well, it's astounding. You you know Russian law better than we do. And I said, well, see, that's, you learn it, you know. So I really had to switch gears. But they loved it by the end. They loved it by the end, the participatory method. They didn't at the beginning at all. But at the end, they loved it. And at the beginning, I started out, I was the only teacher. At the end, I never taught a word. Over the 2 years I was there, and then 4 years, because I was 2 years back later in Vladivostok, I had found enough Russian lawyers that I had trained in the way that we wanted them to teach, and they all took it over.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's what you need to do. You need to work with the local people. And when I went to Cambodia, I got in a van with a translator. We drove out to the village, out in the middle of nowhere, where you had to get out and walk a mile or two because there was no such road. I would go in there with my translator, who was herself a lawyer, Cambodian lawyer, and say, I'm an American lawyer. I have a little bit of money. How can I help you make your life easier? Oh, they told me. They had some ideas, and they told me. And you know what was the number one thing that came up in every single village?
Women's empowerment?
Domestic violence.
Oh, okay. That's...
Domestic violence.
Wow.
Every single village.
Wow.
That was the first thing that came up. Why can my husband beat me, but when I hit him back, then I get arrested? Mm. Well, that would be a good question, wouldn't it?
A very, very salient.
Yeah. Very salient question. So they were wonderful. And they said, okay, we want a book about what women's rights are in Cambodia under the law. And I said, but you can't read. And they said, our children can. And we'll make our children read it to us, and that way they'll learn and we'll learn.
Wow.
Are these smart women or what?
Incredible. They know how to, well, that's bringing
exactly.
the family together.
And they said, okay, we want a video explaining, you know, women's rights and what rights we have and how it works and what, the, you know, blah, blah. And I said, but you don't have any electricity. How are you going to play a video? And they said, once a week on Friday night, a guy comes by on a motorcycle, and he has a generator on the back of his motorcycle, and they hang a sheet up in the town square, and they show a movie once a week on Friday night. And she said, we'll make them show this movie. And that way, the men will learn it as well as the women.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, again, this is the perfect response. Listen to the local people.
Yeah.
Listen to them. They know what to do. So then the third thing they said was, give us a hotline. Give us a phone number that we can call any time of the day or night to find out free legal information.
Oh, wow.
And my answer was, you don't have a telephone. And they said, we will walk to the next village where there is a telephone and we will get it. Okay.
That's determination.
I mean, this is what you learn when you actually go out and listen to people on the ground.
Right.
So, of course, you know what happened when I got back to Phnom Penh and told my boss.
What happened?
No, you can't do any of that.
You've done the whole wrong thing, yeah.
Oh, no, you can't do that. We Americans know better what needs to be done than these Cambodians. Well, you know, no, I did not put up with that crap for very long. We fought like the devil, and I said, you don't know a crappin' thing about these women's lives, and no, we're not doing what you want. Yes, we are doing what they want, blah, blah, blah. So we fought like the Dickens, and finally he agreed to 100 of the books. So we did the books in Khmer. We did the books, and I said, 100, are you crazy? And he said, well, that's all they're going to be used. So 100 were gone in 20 minutes. So then he said, okay, well, fine, we'll do 1,000. They were gone in a week. So finally he agreed to 10,000. It ended up, I think we published something like almost 100,000 of them.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're all over Cambodia. And years later, years after I left Cambodia, people came back from the trafficking camps where they were bringing women back from Thailand that had been trafficked from Cambodia to Thailand. And they were in these waiting, holding camps in Cambodia.
Oh, yes.
And they said they had every night they had a women's group, support group, kind of a discussion. And what book were they using? That book.
Beautiful.
So, I mean, this is what's often so wrong with foreign aid. We
right.
don't listen
right.
to the local people. And the Brits are just as bad as the Americans.
Oh, yeah. They want a photo op, you know.
Yeah. They want a photo op. They want to do it their way. They think they know better, and they don't.
Yeah, the old patriarchal view, isn't it? The old empirical view.
It's the old imperialism just reborn.
Yeah.
Exactly. But so it was just so rewarding, and to be yeah. able to do these things, and I often had to fight my own people to do what the local people said was what was required as opposed to what they thought should be done. And oftentimes I would even have the support of the embassies, I would have support of the funders, and my idiot bosses would say, we decided to do this. And I'd have to fight with them and say, are you crazy? The funders agree with this, the embassy agrees with this, everybody agrees with this, you got your head up your behind parts, and you need to stop this.
A hard yep. barrier, so to speak. Yeah.
It is a hard barrier. Yes, it is. But women are not yep. listened to worldwide.
Right.
Women will not listen to in the United States.
No, and that's why it continues, why we have to have an International Women's Day and
exactly.
All this activism still. And coming up next week is a big deal because you're not just protesting at the Capitol. You're going to do a major march, a hike.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us about what's
miles.
Happening? Yeah.
To make Arizona the 38th state.
Exactly.
And the National Council on Jewish Women is organizing this, and they are doing a fantastic job. A fantastic job. So it starts Monday at noon at the Capitol, where there'll be national speakers and then a press, you know, conference, et cetera. And then the march takes off. And then Tuesday morning, they start at Sandra Day O'Connor's house, which is now a museum in Papago Park, you know, Sandra Day O'Connor, the justice.
Yeah, first
Sandra Day O'Connor,
Supreme Court.
First woman on yeah. the Supreme Court from Arizona. And it starts at her house, and then they go to the office of Kyrsten Sinema, the first senator, woman senator from Arizona.
Right.
Then on the third day, they walk from the Kyrsten Sinema's office to back to the Capitol again to be there by noon, where there'll be more national speakers. And along the way, there'll be stops for historic events and presentations and, you know, this building is historic for that reason or that building is historic for that reason or this is where the first vote occurred or whatever it is.
Right.
There'll be educational things along the way. And it's for families, and you can push a buggy. It's on the sidewalk, not on the streets, on the sidewalk, and family-friendly. And then the third day, we'll arrive back at the Capitol at noon, and there'll be another rally, and yeah. then with national speakers, and then we'll go into the gallery of the House and the Senate for the afternoon events.
And so when you're actually going in there, what will be happening?
I'm not at liberty to say at this moment.
Oh, okay. Maybe a Wisconsin style protest?
No. No, not at this point yet.
Okay.
Not yet. That's coming.
Okay.
If we don't get it passed, that's coming.
Okay.
Other things are taking place before that. But this is being saved until the end.
So that is exciting to be so close now. And it's just, how many people are you expecting on the walk?
Hundreds, if not thousands.
Wow. How can people donate, join in, go and help?
Absolutely. Go to our website, our Facebook page, our Twitter. Everything is ERA Task Force AZ. Everything. ERATaskForceAZ.com, and the Twitter is at ERATaskForceAZ, and Facebook is ERATaskForceAZ. So we're also, if you can't come to the march, you can sponsor a marcher.
Ah, okay.
$1 a mile, $10 a mile, $100 a mile, and it will be spent for passing the ERA.
Wow, what a great project.
It is. It's been a tremendous amount of work, and the women who are organizing have done a fabulous job. We are just so thrilled that our team has worked so well together. The women in Arizona have stepped up, and it's just been a great collaboration.
Against a lot of odds.
Against a lot of odds.
No.
We're not giving up.
Right.
Never.
Well,
as Susan B. Anthony said, failure is impossible.
Indeed. And in fact, on this day in 1884, I read, and she addressed the U.S. House Judiciary Committee arguing for an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It's quite an important day.
Yep.
Let's hope next week will be very important and we get over the line, haul it over the line to be number 38.
Let's do it.
Well, I really appreciate the interview, Diane, and a great effort, and we'll be watching to see what happens. And
thank you very much.
And
thank
encourage
you for talking to me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much. Okay, good luck next week. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.